In your Bibles, please, for our second reading to the book of Esther, chapter 5. Esther, chapter 5, verse 1, hear now the inerrant, infallible, and inspired Word of God. Now it came to pass on the third day that Esther put on her royal apparel, and stood in the inner court of the king's house, over against the king's house. And the king sat upon his royal throne in the royal house, over against the gate of the house. And it was so, when the king saw Esther the queen standing in the court, that she obtained favor in his sight. And the king held out to Esther the golden scepter that was in his hand. So Esther drew near and touched the top of the scepter. Then said the king unto her, What wilt thou, Queen Esther, and what is thy request? It shall be given thee to half of the kingdom. And Esther answered, If it seem good unto the king, let the king and Haman come this day unto the banquet that I have prepared for him. Then the king said, Cause Haman to make haste, that he may do as Esther hath said. So the king and Haman came to the banquet that Esther had prepared. And the king said unto Esther at the banquet of wine, What is thy petition, and it shall be granted thee, and what is thy request, even to half of the kingdom it shall be performed. Then answered Esther and said, My petition and my request is, if I have found favor in the sight of the king, and if it please the king to grant my petition and to perform my request, let the king and Haman come to the banquet that I shall prepare for them, and I will do tomorrow as the king hath said. Then went Haman forth that day joyful and with a glad heart. But when Haman saw Mordecai in the king's gate, that he stood not up nor moved for him, he was full of indignation against Mordecai. Nevertheless, Haman refrained himself. And when he came home, he sent and called for his friends and Zeresh, his wife. And Haman told them of the glory of his riches and the multitude of his children and all the things wherein the king had promoted him and how he had advanced him above the princes and servants of the king. And Haman said, Moreover, yea, Esther the queen did let no man come in with the king unto the banquet that she had prepared, but myself. And tomorrow am I invited unto her also with the king. Yet all this availeth me nothing, so long as I see Mordecai the Jew sitting at the king's gate. Then said Zeresh his wife and all his friends unto him, Let a gallows be made of 50 cubits high, and tomorrow speak thou unto the king that Mordecai may be hanged thereon. Then go thou in merrily with the king unto the banquet. And the thing pleased Haman, and he caused the gallows to be made. May God add his blessing to the reading and to the hearing of his most holy word. Now, I've been watching your faces as we all looked up from this passage, and some of you had a very sly grin on your face. But that's because you know what's coming. Okay, but if you had never read this, there would not be a sly grin on your face, right? This would be something where the chapter would close and then we would hear the trumpets in the back saying, bum, 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 right? Because it's quite a dire ending that we have here. Haman is set at the end of this chapter to go and ask the king for Mordecai's head, right? In a noose, his neck in a noose. All right, well, let's talk through the passage then. So, in the opening part of this chapter, Esther takes her life into her hands. She has been fasting 3 days. She puts off her sackcloth and puts on her royal apparel and walks in to the court where the king's throne is. And you have to understand the affair. Okay, she walks in. She would come in from the side, and the king, Ahasuerus, may not even notice her for quite some time, depending on what he's doing. He's not expecting a guest. He's not looking, who's going to come see me today? Because everybody knows that when you come to see the king, if you don't have a reason, you're taking your life in your hand. So we can infer from that that, you know, he didn't get many social calls unless there was some prearrangement made. And so he was not expecting guests. And so we don't know how long Esther stood there wondering if her life was hanging in the balance or not. You know, boom, 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 boom. Can you imagine the stress and the blood pressure rise and all of those physiological things that come to pass when great fear might grip you? And yet she stands and waits for the king to notice her. And then when the king notices her, that advanced jump in the heart, is the scepter coming forward or is he going to turn away? And if he turns away, there are guards stationed in that court simply to whisk her out to die without another word from the king. He doesn't even have to say, put her to death. All he has to do is look over at her and then turn away without holding forth the scepter. And she's a dead woman. That's what we're up against here. But in the Lord's decree and plan and providence to save his people, the king holds out the scepter to her. And so over she goes to the king. She touches the top of the scepter and pays her proper respects to the king. And notice what he says to her. It is an idiom of great kindness. He says to her, "What is thy request, Queen Esther? Ask what you will, up to half the kingdom." Now, no one ever took the king up on that. Let's remember that. But this is an expression of great magnanimity. This is how great my heart is toward you. Ask what you will, up to half the kingdom, and it shall be given thee. Now, let's also see the sagacity of Esther. She's a very sagacious woman, very wise. Very wise. Not a trickster, not a manipulator. She's very wise. She understands the king. She understands that what she has to request is large. It's big. It's how we say it in our parlance. We say it's a big ask, right? This is a big ask. She is going to ask him to overturn a decree that has his signet on it. That's what she's going to ask him to do. She's going to have to convince him that someone did not have his best interests at heart when that person entered into his court and suggested that. Right? She's going to have to do all of that. She's going to have to bring several things to bear. She's not able, at least in this Bible expositor's mind, she's not able simply to rely upon her looks here. She's going to be very wise in the way that she prosecutes this. And so the first thing that she does is she asks for a banquet. She asks for a banquet, and I don't know if you noticed or not, but it's a banquet of wine. Okay, and what is wine? What do you do when you sit down at a banquet of wine with others? What are you professing? You're professing friendship and leisure and communion and commonality. In the ancient Near East, this was a very friendly affair. So it is not hypocritical on her part. What she is doing is she is wanting to expose that one that King Ahasuerus has brought into his confidences may not have his best interests at heart. He may instead have his own interests at heart. And that is not a good servant to the king. So she must do this, and she must do it in such a way that it will be received. Simply to come out with the truth at this point, without Haman there, would not do. She's going to accuse Haman. Haman must be there to answer for himself. And yet, as we will see, Haman will have no answer. Because his interest was completely self-interest. And in order to punctuate that, the prophet, as he closes out the chapter, has Haman going to his house in much joy. He is touting his riches. He is touting his favor. He is touting that he is unique in all of the kingdom. The King has taken me into His confidence like nobody else. He trusts me more than any of His other servants, more than His chamberlains, more than His closest counselors. He trusts me. He has brought me into His confidence. The Queen herself has taken up and followed the King in this, such that she has asked only me. She's throwing a special banquet of wine for the King, and she asks only me to come. Just me. And she's going to do it again tomorrow. There is no one in this kingdom that is of greater authority than I, save the King Himself. I am such a favored man. And were the chapter to end there, there would almost be a little bit of sympathy for Haman, except that he says, "But all of this availeth me nothing. As long as when I come out of the gate, that old Mordecai refuses to stand in my presence. He will not show me respect. And so all of these other things, they are meaningless to me." Do you hear that? That's the mindset of Haman. We've said this before. It doesn't really matter how much he has. What does the covetous man want? More. Doesn't matter how much he has. He just wants more. How many in the kingdom of Ahasuerus would have swapped places with Haman as Haman understood it like that? Everybody but Haman. Haman was the only one who would not have swapped places with Haman. In the whole kingdom. Right? And then let's see one more thing. We're going to see this a little bit later in 1 Corinthians 15 in our morning study, right? Evil communications corrupt good morals. If you were sitting at the table with Haman, and he said all of those things, and he showed his riches and his children and his grandchildren, and the respect and the honor and the position and the privy council that he had with the king. And he said to you, "Oh, but all of this availeth me nothing except because that Jew, Mordecai, will not show me honor in my presence." What would you have said to him? Does that really mean something to you when you got all this other stuff going? That would have been wise counsel, right? Don't let that bother you, Haman. Look at all the things that you have. Be content with what you have. It is wildly beyond the imaginations of everyone else in the kingdom. Can't you be happy with that? Haman, think about it. Instead, what did they say to him? This is tragic. They said, "You know what? We agree with you. You should be happy in every particular. So, build up a gallows then. And when you have your privy audience with the king tomorrow, before you go into the banquet, let Mordecai be hanged on that gallows 50 cubits high for all to see, so that everyone will know this is what happens to the man that disregards Haman. And then you can go and you can have the joy that you deserve with the king." That's what they told him. What miserable counsel that was. Miserable counsel. Let us not hate our brother in our heart that way. Right? Leviticus 19:17. Let us in any wise rebuke, correct our brother rather than hate him in our heart. Because all they did that day was manifest how much they hated him, not how much they loved him. They gave him some worthless or worse than worthless counsel. Did they not? All right. Thus ends the reading then in Esther chapter 5.